Shalom, this is Yair Davidi from New Bambi, Brit Am Broadcasting, Israel. We are continuing our study of Psalm 119. The present section that we are studying extends over 8 verses, beginning from Psalm 119, verse 121, up until 119, verse 128. In the Hebrew original, each verse of these 8 verses begins with a word whose first letter is the Hebrew letter Ayin. Ayin. Ayin has no exact equivalent in English. It may be translated as an A or as an E, or as some other sound, depending upon its place in the sentence or its place in the word structure. Sometimes it can even be translated as a G. For instance, we have the city Gaza, which in English is known as Gaza, the Gaza Strip, the infamous Gaza Strip. So we see that sometimes Ayin can even be a G. And so too we find a king in ancient Israel called Omri. He was a king of northern Israel, of the northern 10 tribes. He was quite a mighty king, quite famous. He fought against the Assyrians, and he apparently made quite an impression on the Assyrians. So the Assyrians called the Israelites in his honor. They called the Israelites the House of Omri, or just the Omri. And they pronounce Omri as Gomri. That's what we find in Assyrian inscriptions. Israel, the northern state of Israel, being referred to as Beit Gomri, the House of Gomri, or just as Gomri. That is why it has been suggested that the Israelites became identified with the Cimmerians, the people we know as the Cimmerians, but who in ancient times referred to themselves, or at least were referred to by others, as the Gimeri or Gomri. And there are additional indications that a portion of the Israelites indeed were to be identified with these people, or at least as a part of them. And this is also indicated in the book of Hosea, where Hosea predicts that the lost 10 tribes would be known as Gomer, and would link up with an entity known as Gomer, which is another form of Gomri. At all events, that is another subject, but it links up with the letter Ayin and how the letter Ayin is to be pronounced. And this letter, like all letters in the Hebrew alphabet, has a meaning of its own. Each letter in the Hebrew alphabet has its own meaning. When we analyze these meanings, we obtain an insight as to the fundamental structure and fundamental import of words which contain these letters. At all, whatsoever the case, the letter Ayin connotes or means, and when used as a word, it means an eye. Possibly the English word eye comes from Ayin. It's very similar, Ayin. Ayin can mean an eye, it can also mean a spring of water. And it, by extension, Ayin also gives rise to the root to study, to look at very carefully. We use our Ayin to eye it, to look at it, to put our eye to it. Ayun. Therefore, Ayun in Hebrew means to study something quite closely, and on the other hand, we have Oyen. Oyen from the same letter, and also from the same root, but with a slight change. Oyen means to be hostile. In other words, someone who is oyen, he is putting his eyes, paying attention, but he is doing it in an antagonistic meaning, or an antagonistic intention. He has a malicious intent. But the principle remains the same. It means paying close attention to something. Both words, iyun and oyen, have the principle of putting one's eye to a task, to a specific task. And this, also this connotation, this reflection of the meaning of the name Ayn, is a theme of the eight verses. So the eight verses which we are studying, each verse somehow or other returns to this theme. It is either requesting that God judge us more closely and help us, or saying that we ourselves are applying ourselves to study the will of the Almighty, and therefore we ask the Almighty to help us. And perhaps this is the key to all of this entire psalm. We have said this entire psalm, 119, is built up of 22 sections. Each section consists of 8 verses. And each one of these 8 verses begins with a word whose first letter is one letter of the Hebrew alphabet. And so therefore each section is named after one of the letters, one of the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. And if we apply ourselves to understanding what the meaning of the name of this letter is in Hebrew, we obtain a key to understanding the unique applicability, the unique direction of the 8 verses within the psalm. And this is a discovery. This is something new, but it seems to work. And it took us most of the letters of the alphabet. We had to go through most of the letters of the alphabet in this psalm. I know about 15 out of 22 before we even came across this key, before we even realized what was going on. But we got there. In the end, we got there. We found it. We found this key. We found this method of analyzing the psalm, and it works. So I don't know. You've probably all seen the t-shirt slogan. Like these days, people walk around with t-shirts and something written across their t-shirts. So one of these t-shirt slogans that I recently saw said, "Talk slowly, I am a natural blonde." Maybe I got mixed up. Said, "I am a natural blonde, talk slowly." At all events, it implied that blondes can be slow. Now, I myself am a natural blonde, and sometimes I too can be slow. But we get there. We catch on. So that's the bottom line. In the end, we catch on, and sometimes we have insights of our own. But we do think slowly, and sometimes we do not think at all. Sometimes we just kind of let things permeate into us, let them soak into us, let the information that's out there in the air seep into us, and it does. We get there in the end. Somehow or other, we usually manage to reach the place we are supposed to be headed for from the beginning. There is hope for us. It takes all kinds to make this world, and we are one of them. And maybe the world would have difficulty getting on without us, the same as we would have difficulty in getting on without it. Now, getting back to serious matters, even though that too is serious, we begin a study of this section. We begin with Psalms 119, verse 121. It says, "I have done judgment and justice. Lead me not to my oppressors. As God, help me, was fair to others, so let me not be treated unfairly." Let me not be treated unfairly. That is what the psalmist asks the Almighty. And then he goes on, 119, verse 122. Be surety for thy servant for good. Let not the proud oppress me. So he asks God to uphold him, since God knows him, and God can guarantee my sincerity. So this is referring, these verses are continuing the theme that we spoke of, the whole meaning of the letter Ayin. He's asking God to examine him, or to examine the situation, and to help him. And that is what we said, Ayin gives rise to the letter, to the root, to the principle of Iyun, of examination. And also means an eye. And goes on, in 119, 123, mine eyes fail for thy salvation. Nene. Returning to the theme, and for the word of thy righteousness. He says he's looking out for God to save him, and for the word of God to sustain him. And so far his hope has not been fulfilled. 119, 124, deal with thy servant according unto thy mercy, and teach me thy statutes. Judge me by your own mercies, not according to my mercies, not according to what I am, but as you are. Teach me your demands, God. Teach me what you require of me, so that I may merit to receive your mercy. 119, 125, he says, I am thy servant, give me understanding that I may know thy testimonies. I am a servant of you, God. I serve you. Therefore, I need understanding in order to serve you better. Without your help, without your teaching me, without your directing me, I am lost. I do not know what to do, and I have to do it because that is what I am made for. That is what I realize I should do. And it goes on, Psalms 119, 126, it is time for thee, Lord, to work, for they have made void thy law. And this verse is problematic. It could be translated differently from how it is translated in the King James Version. According to the Hebrew, it could be So the first section of the verse should be read, it is time to act on behalf of the Almighty. Instead of it is time for the Lord to work, it should be reflecting us. It is time to do something for the Almighty. For they have made void thy law. So that is how some of the commentators do interpret it, but this could also be translated as saying, let them break your law. So this has been understood by some of the sages to say that in very exceptional circumstances, minor commandments or minor traditions may be broken. We may break certain minor injunctions in order to preserve the whole of the Torah, in order to keep major principles, we break certain minor commandments or traditions. An example is the Torah, the oral law. Now we all know that from the Bible it was written down, telling us what to do, telling us what the commandments were, and if you just read the Bible as it is, you don't really know how the commandments should have been kept. It is obvious that many of the commandments needed some type of explanation accompanying them. It also says in Deuteronomy 17 that when anyone had any doubt as to how the commandment should be applied, as to the practical application of the commandment, they should get up and they should go to the priests and they should go to the sages and to that will be in their time, and they shall ask them, and whatever the sages say unto them, that is what they should do, and they should not depart from what they would be told to do, neither to the right nor to the left. And anyone who does depart from what they are told to do by the sages is liable to be put to death, according to Deuteronomy 17. Look it up. So, we did have an oral tradition, and we did have authority for an oral tradition, meaning an explanation as to how The laws should be kept. And this oral tradition was passed down orally. It was passed down by word of mouth. And it was not written down. At least it was not written down for public consumption. It did happen that because there was a great deal of oral law. Over the years, it accumulated a great deal of oral laws, a great deal of different judgments that people who studied these matters made short notes of their own, for their own recollections, for their own learning. But they never put them out in public. But in the course of time, under the Roman occupation, there was a danger that this oral law would be forgotten. There was a great deal of it, and the sages were not able to get together so much and discuss matters and rejuvenate their recollections. And there was a great danger that this would be forgotten or not remembered correctly and lead to false or misinterpretation, or there would arise controversies as to what the original versions were, and this would result in different applications, different rulings. So therefore it was decided that the tradition, or the very strong tradition, the very strong ruling that had been considered part of the law itself, but not to write the law down, should be broken. That from now on, the prohibition against writing down the oral law should be done away with, and this was decided in order to preserve the oral law. So this is an application of the principle. It is time to do something for the Almighty. We have to break the law. In other words, we have to break the law in order to preserve respect for it. In order to preserve it, we have to break some aspect of it. Consequently, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, Yehuda the Prince, wrote down the oral law, most of the oral law. He wrote it down in summarized fashion, in a very concise manner. He did this in about 200 CE, about 200 years into the Common Era. And this became known as the Mishnah. In the course of time, the Mishnah itself became uncertain. It was written down in a very concise, very syntactical fashion. And the sages themselves were not always certain as to how the Mishnah should be interpreted and what its precise application should be. And so they had discussions concerning the correct interpretation of the Mishnah. These discussions are known as Gemara. And these discussions were also written down together with the conclusions of the discussions as to what the practical application of the law should be. So these discussions are known as Gemara. The Gemara discusses the Mishnah. The Mishnah and the Gemara together comprise the Talmud. So that is what the Talmud is. The Talmud is a discussion of the oral law and the conclusions as to how the oral law should be applied. In addition to that, it also writes down the how the discussions developed, and sometimes in the course of discussion, the sages would also bring up certain anecdotes that illuminate the subject at hand or illuminate important matters. And here and there they throw in legends and allegories and so on. And so that too became part of the Talmud. Talmud is quite a large body of literature. It's very big. It's about the size of the Encyclopedia Britannica. But it's much more complicated than the Encyclopedia Britannica. In order to understand one page, sometimes you need hours of study, days of study, in certain cases weeks and months of study. And it is studied. People do study it. Great minds study it. And great minds become greater through studying it. It sharpens up the intellect, refines the intellectual powers, and it has helped the Jewish people be an intellectual nation. It has contributed to the intellectual inheritance of the Jewish people. It's not for nothing that the Jews have very great achievements in science, in literature, and in all intellectual activities. Continuing with our study, verse Psalm 119 verse 127 says, "Therefore I love thy commandments above gold, yea, above fine gold. Because I serve God, he requites me with the understanding of his will, and his law. And therefore I love his commandments and directives. I work for them in order to understand them, in order to understand what to do. I put myself out and I get something back. And what I get back tells me what to do, tells me what the Almighty wants of me, it tells me what he wants of me, and how through that I can help myself, and I can help my family, I can help my nation, the people I identify with and live amongst, and I also can help the whole world. It gives a purpose of life, it gives me meaning. And this is better to me than gold. It's worth more than money." Psalms 119 verse 128 says, "Therefore I esteem all thy precepts concerning all things to be right, and I hate every false way." So he says, because learning what God wants gives me this knowledge, gives me this insight, which makes me something other than what I otherwise would be. It creates me to be a being who is more attuned, more in tune with what the Almighty wants of him. This is of great value. It leads us in the right way. And I value what I am being taught more than gold, because it teaches me these things. And obviously, I hate all false ways, because all false ways, all lies, all mistruths, all falsehood will bring me to the exact opposite of all of this. So therefore, we should learn as much as we can. We should pray. We should say the Psalms and understand them, and ask the Almighty to help us, to give us understanding and direction. Because that is the best thing we can do in this world. Thank you. This is Yair Davidi from New Bambi, Brit and Broadcasting, Israel.